Hi, this is Alan Carrington again. I am with now a good friend. This has really been an exciting week, actually. Kurt Bonk has arrived here from America. I forget, Kurt, where we last... Probably was in Sydney, wasn't it, at the Moodle Moot. Kurt Bonk, with a name like that, you've got to be famous, okay? But Kurt is truly one of the leading thinkers in e-learning development, and Kurt's down here on an invitation of the University of Adelaide. But Kurt, I wanted to particularly take time to ask you about this thing called a MOOC. Why is it special? I mean, you've just shown an enormous amount of resources in the last couple of hours of good teachers providing free resources to people. Why is a MOOC getting people excited?
Alan, it's great to be back here in Australia, and it was Melbourne 2 years ago. And
Melbourne, was
I
it?
I like the now we are friends. I wonder if we weren't friends back then. I just give me a hard time.
Yeah. I think we've been friends since about
1999. It's been a long time, and I think you and I probably had been very much in the MOOC mode back in 99. We would have picked up on it. What's happened is that we hit the tipping point. And to get to the tipping point, oftentimes media has to pick up on this. And the media picked up on it when MIT, Harvard, Stanford, and other well-known established universities were endorsing it, funding it, announcing about it, offering it, and people were, in fact, enrolling in through a system that could record and note how many people were in it, when their start date was, when the end date was. All that became formalized. In the past, Open Educational Resources was out there in an informal manner. They're shifting it to a semi-formal. When it moves into the academic arena with major players around it and students who are accessing it who previously wouldn't have accessed open education to the degree that they are, and to add it to your transcript or record if it is credentialed in some ways, that changes the ball game a bit from just a browsing kind of an experience, a dipping your toe into something that's almost like a regular type of class. I'm not saying it is, but it's getting so close that now people saying to themselves, oh yeah, I think I could either do this or participate in one as a student.
And yeah, okay, so in that environment, though, we're going to get good MOOCs and bad MOOCs, like we've got good online only and bad online only. Mm-hmm. I mean, what makes a good MOOC?
And like we have bad face-to-face instruction.
True.
Many instructors face the wall and talk to the board, Yeah. So when people ask, how is online any better than a face-to-face instruction? Yeah. Well, there's a lot of pretty poor face-to-face instruction. So I think what's happening as we see blended environments and online, changing awareness of how one can teach and engage students. Those ideas about interactive and collaborative environments where students are empowered find their way into regular instruction. What I think will happen with MOOCs is it will be a both end. We'll be utilizing aspects of good sound pedagogy that we know about, but we'll also be developing new pedagogies, and these will evolve. In doing a MOOC back in May, Alan, I had my own feet get wet in this process, and I found 20 things that I've formed as advice for others. You want to hear some of those?
Yeah, yes, please.
Okay. So among those is early feedback. If you just like in any online class, if you don't give students some kind of early activity with feedback, they will drop. So people want to know if they know something. And in an online environment, feedback becomes the most critical element. In a face-to-face environment, you give feedback to two or three people. Everyone's happy. They go home. They drive home. In online, everything you post as a student, you're expecting to get some kind of feedback on. And that's going to kill you as an instructor. So Harvard and Stanford are providing system feedback, computer-based. I saw from my friend at University of Michigan do peer-based feedback. Others doing self-based. Some are doing what I did is I had eight teaching assistants help give feedback to people. So number one is feedback. Number two is test the system early. If you're doing a synchronous session, don't expect to show up a half hour ahead for 1,000 people who are coming in. go in an hour ahead and test. If you got 1,000 people or even 100 are expecting it to work, you better make sure it's working.
How much response do you get to a synchronous event in a MOOC? Would you get 1,000, 2,000 people turn up?
We had 4,000 people sign up asynchronously.
Yeah.
Of those 4,000, we ranged between almost 200 to some, over 600, and it's at a time.
At a time.
Yeah. And now I've heard a lot of people talk about this notion of having about 500-600 people show up for a synchronous session when you're talking about thousands enrolling. Now, if you're talking hundreds of thousands enrolling, like some Stanford classes, you might not be able to satisfy them in terms of bandwidth. But
yeah,
if you have a mini MOOC, I'm sorry, mini, but yeah, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, you probably should hold some synchronous sessions or provide some ways to access the instructors so they get a personal feel, some social presence on the
social
part of the
presence, yeah.
Very critical. That's the third or fourth principle now that we've discussed.
To keep moving here.
Yeah, well, there's many more things that you need to do.
Hours, but go on.
Well, in running a MOOC, you should have weekly feedback and recaps about what's going on, recapping the events if you missed it, you know, archiving it and posting it, personalizing it so you're calling out students by name as they show up for a synchronous session. If they post asynchronous, include their name if you're giving feedback.
Yep.
So trying to get identity and creating satellite discussions about teams that might be interest groups, in effect, that might be interested in some aspect of what it is that you're teaching. You can form that as well. Other things that you might be able to do in a MOOC is advertise, get the word out that you're offering it, let people know that it's going to be offered. You might also want to designate in the team that you have who's going to give feedback to who. Have some kind of coordinated structure or schedule for that. You might also have students recap what they've learned in three words. What are three words that recap what you've just learned from the synchronous session so as to debrief, so as to summarize and synthesize a bit? You might also pull out geographically in a map where people are located to give them, again, some sense of identity as participants in this class.
Now, that's principle number five.
Well, we've gone through almost 10, believe it or not, so far.
Okay.
I'm randomly jumping around. If people want to know more,
please.
My trainingshare.com website will have.
Well, this will all be in the blog entry. All your academic rigor will be there. All your websites and links.
The
mother load, anyway.
And I've designed this little talk I'm doing tomorrow at University of New South Wales and Macquarie. It has 20 types of MOOCs, 20 leadership principles, 10 business models, and 20 principal advice about teaching. So,
you're so good at this in putting all the resources out there, guys. Go, you'll get the links from the blog site. But I've got to ask Kurt this question: Kurt, what should an academic / teacher, more a passionate teacher than an academic as such, if they want to put something online open? A course, what do they do? Do they have to get their university approval, I guess? Did you?
Well, I've put up a lot of resources, and one of them, my dean supported it, and he asked me to put it up. I mean, they asked me to create content to train people how to teach online.
Yeah.
That went up through a university site, and I created a YouTube site, and I got permission to do so, so it's dual posted.
Right.
But that was university generated. My university wanted it to happen. In terms of my class contents, we have university sites to put our syllabi and other resources, but I've also bought a couple of, .com sites. I have my World is Open book, I have worldisopen.com. So, it's a combination. A digital scholar will think about organizing and packaging contents for people that they interact with. It might be in a wiki. It might be through your blog. It might be through a website that you design. That could be from your university or could be personal. I think all that, there's in teaching classes that are online, you don't always have to use the existing systems of your university. You should take advantage of them, but you should also think about extending beyond them.
Okay, so although it's called massive, there's a place for a moderate open online a medium, whatever.
A mini? I've heard something about some kind of mini open online class. You know, people are getting kind of too enthralled with this notion of massive. And maybe it's the sheer numbers that are so eye-opening.
Yes.
But yet, the majority of classes that are taught online are not these of a massive variety at all, and nor should they be, in fact. But if you teach a class to 20 students and you have a way to make your videos that you might have, a weekly lectures, that or your supplemental resources and books available for those that never could enroll in that class, all the more power to you. So yes. It should be both and. You should be thinking about what I call open teaching. Open teaching means you have typically a small class that you allow anyone to either participate in while you're doing it live or to come and revisit it later. Could be a marketing tool for your course in your university. That could be a way to improve the contents because you're getting feedback on it. And it could just be a goodwill effort on your part to help the world out. There are many reasons. One is to learn about cultures of the world. As you get contacts from Zimbabwe or from Chile or wherever, you find out a little bit about their cultures and their needs and their technology. So you're not just contributing to others. You're also probably getting something from offering those free contents.
I've been talking to Kurt Bonk. There's so much I want to talk to him about, but we're going to wrap it up, right? And thanks, Kurt, for your time, and more than that, thanks for coming to Adelaide.
Yeah, it's great to be in Adelaide. Hey, this is the first time of 5 trips to Australia, and what better way to spend most of this particular trip than to be here in Adelaide and go to wine country with people like you and just see the city.
Thank you. Wait a minute.
Did it save it?
Yes, it's...